Hello, I'm Sean Gough from Triple M. I'd like to welcome you to Triple M's very first courageous conversation about mental health for Triple M's No Talk Day. Before we start, today's conversation is being held on the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation, and we acknowledge them as the traditional owners. We also pay our respects to their elders, past and present, and Aboriginal elders of other communities who may be watching. For our first courageous conversation, we welcome four special guests. This man played 282 AFL games for North Melbourne and the Sydney Swans, and he won Best and Fairest awards at both those clubs. More recently, he's the founder and CEO of Pucker Up, a cause-driven organisation dedicated to eliminating suicide through education and facilitating open conversations about mental health and emotional wellbeing. Welcome, Wayne Schwoss.
Good to be here, Goffey. Thank you.
Our next guest is the drummer for touring Aussie rock band British India. He's the host of Triple M's national night show, Triple M Aussie. He also hosts his own podcast, The Muso, aimed at helping up-and-coming musicians break into the industry. He's also a once-a-day cold showerer. Matty O'Gorman, welcome.
Thanks for having me, Goffey.
Christian McBride is a tour and production manager, stage manager and guitar tech. He's worked with Paul McCartney, B.B. King, Paul Kelly, the Hoodoo Gurus, Bernard Fenning and Vance Joy, among others. He's a board member of Crew Care, who provide advocacy and support for people working in live production. Welcome, Christian.
Thanks, guys. Thanks, Sean.
Our final guest is Dr. Grant Blaschke. He's a practicing GP and the lead clinical advisor for Beyond Blue. He's an expert in workplace mental health and pandemic mental health care.
Great to be with you, Goffey.
Thank you all for taking time out today to share your stories and journey. Dr. Grant, if I could start with you. The whole reason we're here today is to talk about mental health and how do we identify when somebody is struggling with their mental health?
Yeah, so when people have mental health issues, there's really quite a difference in ways that it might express itself. You know, so for a lot of people, they might be getting in arguments at work or at home. A lot of people might have low mood, sleeping problems, getting stuck into the alcohol, you know, withdrawing, not reaching out to friends, all these sorts of things in people's lives can be a little bit of a warning sign, particularly if they go on for a few weeks. We can all have a bad weekend or a bad week, but if it's going on for a few weeks and you really think a friend, a mate is not quite right, these are the sort of things that you notice. And if you're reaching out to a friend, a couple of things to remember. You don't have to be a psychologist, you don't have to solve it, and a good idea is to pick a place that's sort of private. Maybe you go for a drive together, go for a walk, do something else, have a kick of footy, and say, look, I've noticed X, Y, and Z, whatever it is, you're not going out, or, you know, you don't seem to be yourself. How are things going? Pretty commonly, in Australian culture, guys are going to go, all good, no problem,
yeah,
she's right, whatever. And that's okay, you don't have to push too hard. You've opened that door. And they might come back to you, or they might tell you what's going on, because, you know, people are much more open about mental health. So I think, you know, the great thing about No Talk Day and what Triple M's doing is it's really raising this issue so that people are much more comfortable to have those conversations.
Yeah, great. So everybody has mental health. It's just a matter of, you know, where on that sort of continuum our mental health is. And today I think it would be great for us to share as much or as little as we're comfortable with. Mm-hmm. So if I could start with you, because I know a fair bit about your mental health journey and you've been very public in the light of founding your foundation, Pucker Up. Can you just give us a bit of a background or a brief summary, I guess, of your mental health journey?
Yeah, what I'd just like to do to begin with, Goffey, is just acknowledge the fact that there's five men here of different ages and different experiences that are sitting around a table, leaning into a conversation that is fundamentally important to every person at this table. Mm. Everyone that watches, reads, listens, who hears this conversation, because to your point, everybody has mental health. And I think that this is an indication of the maturity that individually, but collectively and societally, that we are starting to see that we can and should be able to talk about these topics as males. Mm. My story is one that's 26 years old and it continues today. Great life growing up, bit of stress coming into the AFL system, nervous breakdown, 26th of July 1993, diagnosed with depression 9th of August 1993. From that day, for the next 12 years, I did everything I could to hide the fact that I had mental health conditions.
You're still playing AFL at this point?
Yeah, I played AFL. I played the final 184 games of my career, hiding the fact that I had anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder.
Wow.
And on the in 1996, when I was lucky enough to become a premiership player with North Melbourne, I didn't want to live.
So 3 years earlier, you're...
Yeah. I was in a four-year battle with suicidal ideation, so I didn't want to live anymore. I was broken physically, mentally and emotionally. I was ignorant, uneducated and absolutely paralysed by fear for that 12-year period of what people around this table would think, say or do if they knew. So I did everything I could to pretend to everybody that I was healthy and happy and healthy. And through that difficult period of my life, I say this a lot now, I do a lot of presenting all over the country, but I'm actually glad that I've gone through what I've gone through. And yeah. I mean that hand on heart.
Yep.
I've grown, I've learnt, I'm a better person, not perfect, far from it, but I've learnt what I need to do to look after my health and well-being. How do I stay healthy without a guarantee that I won't deal with these conditions again? But what this has given me, it's given me the ability to extend that further now, and I'm just as passionate about my own mental health as I am for other people.
Yep.
Because I don't want people to go through what I've gone through. I want people to stay healthy before they start to think about what they can do with their mental health only until they become unwell. Right. I don't need to do that.
Okay. Yep. Christian, so you work, you know, the industry that you work in, the music, entertainment, touring industry, it has had a horrendous... I mean, they've been the industry that have been affected the worst over the last couple of years.
Yep.
What's it been like for you?
Oh, look, it was hard, I'll be honest. I mean, it's funny we talk about dates. So I was so surprised that you latched onto the exact day. I mean, it says that it was deep. I remember the day the pandemic or the lockdown was announced. We had a sniff of it, but it was actually my birthday. We were sitting in the car with my partner.
Wow.
And they said, it was the 30th of March, whatever year, all the years are blurred, right? She turned around and she said, oh, we've got to go home and we've got to go via Kmart, get some board games because these gigs are over, these tours are over. And and that was it. We were first out, music industry, were first cancelled and sort of last back.
Yeah.
And it carries on. So it was bad. And a lot of people didn't work. A lot of, especially, you know, older men and people in the industry couldn't transition their skills. They didn't know what else to do.
Yep.
Yeah, very, and they've done one type of thing. So even when the opportunities, you could actually leave the house, the opportunities to get other work were quite limited. So that doubled down on the stress. I mean, I will say, as far as pandemic goes and speaks to mental health, a lot of people got more sleep than they have in the last 20 or 30 years, and then they learned, or some of the families were glad to see them and some maybe weren't, you know. Maybe, oh, what's going on here? So there was some relationship breakdowns, there were some people that came back together. So I've gone the full gamut of that. I tried to get married 3 times, it got cancelled because we were trying to go to Perth. And that's sort of my story. But in terms of my story as an advocate or whatever, I mentioned crew care.
Yep.
That's where we were all online all the time. That's where we saw each other interacting and, like, knowing that the statistics in my industry are, like, horrendous.
Yeah.
You know, you have a lower 4 or 5 times the rate of people thinking about suicide and really serious mental health problems, be they in a creative artist side, which I'm sure you can speak to, or on tour. And certainly on my side, I'm going to try to... I know we'll keep talking about this, but the nature of the touring industry, it's a very hard industry, lack of sleep, lots of hours, lots of time away. Like the FIFO workers, anyway. But so those challenges, they really bring it home, the physical. So I wanted to come back into my, realise that we needed to do something more. I could get into more sort of stuff that happened, but that's like, we'll come back to it. But yeah, that's sort of my journey as to into where I am right now. Obviously, my story goes back 30 years to, you know, my mental health journey. And I appreciate that, wanted to get across to people that it is a spectrum. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's not so good. And that's probably the same for everyone here.
Did you get married?
Yeah.
No, we haven't got married yet. What's the story? No, we're not married. We're going to try again. It's hard to keep the energy.
And just a supplementary question. When you said you tried to get married 3 times, was that all to the same lady?
Thanks. Well, I'll take it as a compliment. Yeah. I think I'm batting above my weight. I'm like, I'm lucky I got to lock that one down, as they say, so I'll take any.
Interesting thought.
Yeah.
Now, Matty Gorman, you're in a similar industry, or the same industry in some ways. You've obviously come to work for Triple M now, but you're, you know, you're part of a touring Aussie rock band who we shut down to. And,
I think when you want to become a musician, you do it because you love it. I think, and there are a lot of sacrifices with that, whether it be studying, whether it be work, whether it be travelling, you really are committing everything to it. So there's already a bit of anxiety about being a touring musician from the get-go. And whether that's financially, whether that's, you know, being away from family. And then once you start, you fall into bad traps. Like you were saying before, you can fall into really bad habits. Picture everywhere you go, there's beers, food waiting for you to there. Yeah. Just drink it, whatever. You've got friends that come to every gig.
Yeah.
So it's a party every night.
Yeah.
But what the people don't see is you've got the 4:30 flight the next day to go to the next spot. And then what do you do to get to the airport when you're feeling a bit hungover? You have a beer to take the edge off. Then what happens? You get to the hotel, you might have a nap, get back to the next gig. You've got new friends there, fridge full of beer.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden I found I'm falling into some terrible habits without me really knowing. And I'm like, why do I feel so crap all the time? And it's funny, I was actually listening to a podcast that Wayne was on and I had no structure. There was no routine. There was nothing. It was just like I was living out of a suitcase, and that's terrible for your mental health. And the scary thing is, and I'm sure Christian's, is when it stops, when a tour stops, it is a really empty feeling getting back after being 4 months away where everything's kind of taken care of for you. It's planned to just stopping and sitting there going, what do I have if I don't have this? And you really kind of, it creates this other anxiety as well with, what else am I doing with my life? Like, is this it? Is this all I've got? Is this all I have to offer? I remember it was really interesting because I was getting to my like kind of late 30s. And you know, when you start, you know, all your friends are at uni going, gee, I wish I'd do what you did. Yeah. You know, you go around and play, but as you get older, everyone catches up. They've got a proper job.
Yeah.
They're earning good money. And you're kind of still doing the same thing. I remember going to write a resume one day going, okay, what do I put on the resume?
Yeah.
I'm in a band. And that was really confronting. And I think a lot of musicians, coming back to what Christian was saying, when the pandemic hit, a lot of people got really stuck and their mental health really suffered because it's like, well, we put all our eggs in one basket. Yeah. Some people have, and what do you do now?
So interesting, just listening to Matt sort of talk about, you know, doing the resume, I'm not laughing at Matt, but I can relate to that story. Our identity for a lot of men is so connected to what we actually do as opposed to who are we. And listening to Matt just share a few things there, it took me 7 years post-retirement to understand who I was. Because for 15 years previously, every bit of information and feedback and criticism was related to what I did on a football field.
Yeah.
So, and this is not to be critical, but I was institutionalized by what I did. I only saw myself as the athlete. Mm. I didn't know who I was. I didn't understand what my values are. What type of person, how do I like to resolve conflict? I didn't have any of that knowledge. So it took me 7 years to work out, I'm actually a really sensitive person. Love is important to me.
Mm-hmm.
The people in my life, their love, being able to receive it and give it is really important. I'm actually emotional, but for a large part of my life, I had no idea who the hell I was, except for being a football player. So I think this is a challenge for, I don't want to speak on behalf of men, but I think it is a challenge that we see ourselves as only one dimension of the fuller version of who we are.
Mm. So was there, you said it took 7 years, but was there a moment or a series? Was it?
No, there was a moment.
Can you talk about that?
There was a moment that after every... So I worked in the media, as you know, for a long time.
Yep.
And for 7 years after retiring, after every radio call or broadcasting on TV, I would ring my bosses on a Monday. Can I catch up? Yep, sure. What do you want to catch up? I want to get feedback.
So this is the athlete in you coming out.
Yeah, because no feedback's bad.
Yep.
I'm not getting validated. If I was good, played well today, son. If I was bad, really bad, this is what you need to work on. But if there's silence, like, something's wrong. So I would proactively seek this information out. Mm. And after 7 years of doing this, I had an old boss goes, you're ringing me to come in for a meeting. Yep, okay, come in. I've got something for you. So I walked in, he sat down. I said, I've worked you out. He's talking to me. I said, what do you mean? He goes, I've worked you out and I've worked all of your mates out. If you don't get feedback, you think you're doing something wrong. Mm. So while you do this, is you're reinforcing the lessons that you've got from footy. Yeah. If I've got a problem, I'll tell you. But if I don't, you're doing a good job. So now leave me. And it was at that moment, it's like, okay,
right.
I see what I'm doing here. So that sort of opens up this journey of trying to understand who am I beyond what I've done on a footy field.
Goffey, if I can chime in there. It's so interesting and it's wonderful that you're so articulate and happy to share these issues. And, you know, a lot of the mental health issues, whether it's depression or anxiety, we've all got this little self-talk running in our mind, all of us, this little commentary. And when people's mental health is getting a bit wobbly, there's some common patterns we all get into.
Yeah.
So what we call black and white thinking.
Yeah.
So I'm either brilliant or I'm terrible. Or another classic, which I think, you know, Wayne, you really explained quite well, is what we call mind reading. Oh, I didn't get a call. They didn't reply my email. They're probably thinking this.
Yeah.
You imagine what people are thinking. Yeah. So, you know, this is why I'm really passionate about blokes who are having a hard time, get some proper help. Because if you go down what we call, you know, the maladaptive pathways, so you drink, you get arguments with people, relationships blow up, your job's in trouble, that's not great. If you get help early, and I really agree with that idea, maybe you'll go along and see a mental health professional, learn some skills, learn to sort of manage some of that negative spiral sort of thinking that's very easy to get into, and start questioning and going, well, hang on, like you discovered, you know, the default of not getting any feedback is actually everything's okay, not, you know, we're not happy with you. So anyway, you know, without getting too heavy on the psychology, I just think the message is there is great help out there. You know, we've got lots of research, great psychologists, mental health professionals in Australia, calling Beyond Blue. Speak to someone objective so you can challenge some of that negative spiralling thinking that's just so common.
We've talked about mental health being a spectrum and it can come, it can go from, you know, if you have mental health, you feel like you've got it in hand, to I'm having a bad day, I'm having a bad week, right to, you know, the irrational area where nothing seems great. With No Talk Day, I've learned over the, this is our fourth year of No Triple M's No Talk Day, I've learned that we're talking to two different groups of people, those who are struggling with their mental health and those who are witnessing or standing by loved ones or people they care about who are struggling with their mental health. So let's talk about, can we talk about the people who struggle with their mental health? What are practical, I understand that, let's talk about people, I guess, who are further along the spectrum. What can they do when everything feels hopeless? What would you recommend they do?
Yeah, it's a great question. And the first thing is to mention what Christian talked about is, you know, before we get into clever psychology or antidepressants or any of that, routine is actually brilliant. Like the worst thing you can do when you're in a spin is to wake up in the morning with no plan for the day. So creating a bit of a structure, you know, and that was the problem in the pandemic, that people who've had structure since they finished school, they're waking up, I don't know if it's Wednesday or Sunday, I don't know what I'm doing, you know. So creating a bit of a calendar, and I always say to, you know, my patients, try and do one pleasurable thing each day and one achievement thing. What's an achievement thing? I've got to fill out that tax return or go to Centrelink or whatever it is. Pleasurable thing, you know, a lot of people are under financial pressure when they've got mental health issues. Doesn't have to spend money, but it might be go to the park or, you know, go and catch up with a friend. So routine, connections, critical, because the loneliness and withdrawal is hell, right? And that was, another tough thing in the pandemic. So guys are generally, if I can generalise, hopeless at social arrangements. You know, particularly if they've been in a relationship that's blown up and their partner's been the social organiser. So I always say, if you've got a good mate that you like catching up with, make it a regular. So say, you know, Friday morning. Oh, you want to comment on that? You reckon that's...
No, I just think it's a key thing to what you're saying. Like, sort of understanding, and it's like a bit of a wicked problem to go back to what you yourself say. You had a diagnosed problem which you hid for years. That's such a male thing to do, but... I just feel like, and also like when I'm talking to other people, what I try to be aware of is that I'm not necessarily the fixer. you know, I need to listen to their stories in a non-judgmental way when it's obvious to me that someone might be struggling. I can't necessarily fix, but to be there for them, just to listen and to be, and also like the checking in process. So I've had specific situations during pandemic and, you know, you'd see something come up and someone's had a really obvious mental health crisis.
Yep.
And what I've tried to do is actually get on the phone and call them, especially if you see someone doing it online when we were, you know, yes, but it's a hard one. I wanted to say, I think what I also want to say is it's important to know, like, that, you know, you are loved. It seems like a silly thing to say. It's not a very manly thing to say, but the one thing it's going to save someone is to know that you actually do care about, you know. It's not to dump on them and say, oh, other people have got it worse than you. It's a terrible thing to say. But it's to say, I just want to listen to you, mate. I'm there for you. And I'm like, and if you say it in front of a group, it's easier as well, because it's like, you know, in your friend group or whatever, it's like, I'm here just to chat. Then you might have a little trickle. Someone might be able to reach out and go, you know what, I do want to have a chat about something. You know what I mean?
How did you go during the pandemic? You must have, instruction must have gone out the window for you, did it? How did you look after your mental health?
It's a long time coming to get to that. So you'd have to go back a story and to see why I had to do things like stop drinking and do all this other stuff, because I'd realised that my life, as Matt had said, had lacked structure and it was... And so I immediately had the yoga. I mean, like, I'm a little guy. I had to do yoga. It was all about work. It's all like work, achieve, get better. Like, I'm a tiny guy, if you can see on camera. So I had to do the yoga in order to survive the loading. You know, I'm always sort of batting above my weight or whatever. So I had these sort of structures in place, sort of ready to go. And then I sort of jumped on them, right? But I wasn't saying it was always easy. And then I was in a partner as well. It's okay. We were both working. We're both in the industry, both working from home, but then really working from home, that was another thing altogether, you know. Look, it was another intensity. So I had some of the structures in place, but to answer your question, sadly, again, man, I'd see my friends, some of my best friends and mentors, some people that I'd spent longer than with my family or any of my partners with, die in their 50s from heart attack, another one from cancer, and then going back 10 years before that, definitely died of suicide.
Right.
And whether or not that was spoken about, sometimes it gets covered up. Sometimes everyone knows what's happened. So that led to a change in me. I'm in my 40s. I'm pretty cynical. So I was like, it mightn't even be the pension when I'm old. You know, I've got to look after myself. I've got to make some changes.
Yep.
And I'm so sad about what's happened, about, you know, losing some great people. So I sort of made changes in my life to try to, you know, try to be the best that I can, so to speak. It's a bit of a cliche, but that. So luckily, I had the support and I've got the network. So I'm very lucky, you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, I'm, as you can see from my resume, I've had some great opportunities and I've luckily been able to keep them. So, yeah, maybe I'm one of the special ones, but that's what I've seen in my industry.
I think what's really important is that, you know, obviously, the five of us are comfortable to have this discussion. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here. And we have an obvious passion for the topic that we're talking about. But there's a lot of people out there and a lot of men, and it's not limited to males. It's a gender. It's not gender specific. This is an issue that everybody grapples with at some point. A lot of people do. But what I've seen consistently over 16 years of working in this space, and this is not a criticism, but these are observations. Which are causing immeasurable damage in the lives of individuals, their families and their communities. Number one, masculinity. My personal view on this, it needs a new definition, because the notion of harden up, Matt, toughen up, cut it out, don't be weak, don't be soft, is preventing men from being emotionally connected and expressive. What we do when we say those things is we condition men to disconnect emotionally. What's the risk? When they're under emotional stress, they don't know what to do because they've lost that connection. Or if they're like me, they won't do anything because they'll be shit scared of what the response will be, so you don't do anything. That's number one. I'm not advocating these things, but I abused alcohol and drugs through the majority of my football career because I didn't know how to cope. I didn't know how to... When I was going through this journey, I could talk to anyone around this table about my career because I was confident. I knew I had a language that allowed me to talk. But I actually had a nervous breakdown in 1993, and I sat in my car for an hour and a half crying my eyes out. And I chose not to go inside because I didn't want to show that vulnerability to my ex-wife.
You're an AFL footballer at the highest level at this point.
Totally. I'm vice captain of Wayne Kerry. I played 98 games of footy. And I walked in this night and I put my bag in the laundry, sat next to my ex-wife, fiancée at the time, and I didn't say a single word about what had happened in the car. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, it wasn't because I didn't want to. The truth of the matter was I didn't have a language which allowed me to communicate about what had just played out in the car. Yeah. Because I'd grown up as a young boy, and I'm not blaming anyone. I grew up in an environment where men don't behave this way. Yeah. And the ones that do, they're criticised.
Yeah.
So I had this, I didn't realise at the time, but I disconnected emotionally. So I didn't know how to feel. I didn't know how to think. And I didn't know how to interpret all of that and say, hey, I'm really struggling. I need some help. So I chose not to talk because I couldn't talk. So I think the value of these conversations is so important because it has never been more important for all people, including males of all ages, to be able to sit down and talk openly and honestly about emotions, feelings, vulnerabilities, insecurities, and when we're struggling to go, you know what? I just need to talk. Because if we don't change the environments, we're actually not allowing other males to come into those spaces to be able to lean in and go, you know what? I actually need some support here.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Dr. Grant, you would have an opinion. I'm sure I'd love to pick your brain on this one because Swat has spent, you know, 16 plus years trying to find a way to, you know, find that language. Someone who's where Wayne was in 1993 today, how do they find that language to reach out?
Yeah, so a couple of things. First of all, you know, what we call stigma about mental health is very prevalent. So, you know, a lot of people will think, you know, it's a sign of weakness if you have depression, or, you know, they want to hide it, or that you should be able to snap out of it.
I wish it was that easy.
Yeah, if I was just strong enough, I'd just get out of it. And, you know, there are cultural things at play as well. You know, some people come from a family, a cultural background where, you know, a mental health issue would be a big shame for the family as well. So there's all these complex things. You know, the sad side of that is that about 50% of guys don't get any professional help. Yeah. And what they do then is spin out of control, you know, with all those things we talked about, drinking, violence, conflict, losing their jobs, you know, whatever. So the only thing I wonder if I can ask a bit of a question, maybe even Matt, is... Is there generational change? Because I see with my adult male children in their 20s that those fellas, I mean, one of them's a muso as well, but they seem to be, I don't know, not just that they're hugging the whole time, which I'm still getting my head around, but they seem to have, you know, they seem to be a bit more open discourse about emotional stuff. Is that a fair observation?
Yeah, I've definitely even noticed that in music, like over the last 10 years. Like it would be the cool muso, you'd never let your guard down. But now I find, like, talking to other people, everyone is very open, and even in my friendship group as well, like I find, because I've, you know, you have school friends, the same guys you went to school with, it feels like everyone, it only takes one person to talk about it now and everyone is involved. I feel like everyone is a lot more open to talking about it, and especially musicians too, like through Beyond Blue, which has been absolutely incredible during lockdown. I feel like people are a lot more open, and I think, we're just, like, as men, aren't we? We're just scared about people's reaction. You know, we feel like we're being judged if we open up about whatever we're feeling. But I do feel there has been a change, which is, you know, exciting. It's a bit for myself.
Yeah, that's true. That's one thing I was going to say to you, like, you know, it's like, see that people turn 30. There's a career thing as well. Footballers have a limited career. And there's a lot of anxiety, and I see it with musicians as well. I can see them because, like, I'm so old now, but I can see them. They get to a certain age. But they get to a certain point and they go, oh, it's like, I'm 30 now, I'm done. Not on, can't be on opposition, Triple J. But, you know, like, I'm of a certain career, my looks have dropped a bit or whatever. Is that a thing? Was that a thing in, like, a career? Like, I have to achieve this by a certain time, like, these expectations?
Yeah, definitely. And like I was saying before, you kind of gets very routine, like you're doing the same thing. You're writing songs and you're recording albums and you kind of feel like you're in this kind of universe that is just very kind of one way, and you do feel like you're missing out. Like, I missed out on my brother and sister's birthday like 10 years in a row because October. What are you doing in October? You tour.
Yeah.
As you'd know. Yeah, like, you miss milestones and you don't realise how much you miss when you're away all the time. And I definitely had an anxiety about, well, what do you do next? And, I mean, that's when I started thinking about it and putting things in place to move in a broadcasting and Triple M. So, yep. But there is an anxiety about it because financially, when you are a muso, as you know, your son would tell you, you're spending money for 5 years before you even make, you know, a dollar.
Yeah, that's got to be stressful.
On promotion, and now it's there's so much more to it. It's just like it's not really about the music anymore, recording and releasing an album and getting it out there. It's social media now. It's TikTok. It's Facebook. Yeah. It's become like this full-scale operation now where music's kind of just here. It's just like how, you know, if you're a great promoter, it's just changed a lot in a small space of time.
Okay, so you strike me as a doer.
Yes.
And one of those things you did proactively was you sought a broadcasting career with Triple M.
Mm-hmm.
And... you know, my view, you've been one of the sort of fastest developing young announcers that I've known in over 20 years in the industry.
Mm.
So it seems like you take care of responsibility for your own mental health, I reckon.
Yeah.
Like
yeah.
You swim in the bay every day.
Yeah, that was one of the things we did as well. Like during lockdown, we're like, well, we can't do anything.
Are you okay?
Yeah.
Cold showers off in the bay.
Yeah. So we started this group called the Elwood Eels during lockdown in Melbourne. And because there was nothing to do, I'd heard about the benefits of, you know, cold showers and things like that. So I thought I'd try it. And we got groups of people together down at the beach every day from all walks of life that would just come for that swim. And it would be that one thing, you know, they feel like they're getting ahead of the day because they're starting with, you know, a challenge.
I actually think it also talks to connection.
Right.
It's innate to every single person living on the planet.
You need it, right?
Well, yeah, we do. It's fundamental to our existence.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
We need a sense of belonging, and not that I would go and hop in a cold beach.
Mm.
That sort of process is beyond me, but I respect you enormously.
No, you're coming down tomorrow.
But no, I'm not. I swim like a brick. But what it talks to for me is that when we have a common interest, there's a sense of connection. Mm. And when we have a sense of connection, there's a sense of hope. When we're connected and we have hope, we feel like we have options.
Yeah.
At a personal level, when I lived with suicidal ideation for 4 years, I'd lost connection, I'd lost hope, and I was starting to think and believe that I was a burden to other people.
Yeah.
And fortunately, during that period, I had two people that never gave up on me. And they kept me connected and they continued to give me hope. So this, whether it's swimming, it's playing, you know, music of some sort, playing football, it's going and meditating, whatever it is, it's fundamentally important to our holistic health. And finding a common interest with other people, especially when we're struggling from a mental health perspective, gives us the routine, gives us the structure, but also keeps us connected. Because when we start to really struggle with significant mental health conditions, which I did, we lose connection from a lot of things that are really important to us.
So they're the two perspectives, aren't they? The person who's with suicide ideation and struggling with mental health for 4 years and the two people witnessing it that stayed connected with Wayne.
Mm. There's a couple of things that jump out to me there. The first of all is the exercise, okay? And, you know, again, before we get into clever psychology and stuff... Exercise is great. You know, we live in a society where there's so much cognitive happening. You know, you're in your phone and it's all about Instagram and TikTok and thinking. And, you know, often with patients, I'm like, nah, it's about your body, mate. You know, get back into your body and actually, whether it's meditating or swimming or sport, you know, there's a lot of evidence that exercise is great for your mental health. And if you do it in a group, even better. Because it helps you keep up motivation and connection.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I ask you, Swata, because you've been very honest and public that it's an ongoing challenge and battle for you, mental health. What do you do to take care of your own mental health?
Well, it's ongoing because I choose it to be ongoing. The reality is that over the last 26 years, I've lived with and managed, sometimes better than others, at various stages, anxiety, depression, obsessive compulsive disorder, one couple, all of them at the same time. So the journey has taught me that ultimately it's my responsibility. So do I want any of those conditions to come back? No. But what do I do to prevent the likelihood of that happening? Mm. I make decisions every day. Every 24-hour period, I'm making decisions. Number one, for my mental health. Number two, for my physical health. Mm. Because I know that if I don't make those decisions, I increase the probability of those conditions coming back in. And Grant mentioned something earlier on, and it, you know, I have a toolbox which I've developed. The number one tool I have is sleep.
Right. Mm.
For two reasons. Sleep is tonight's investment into tomorrow's productivity. If I don't get sleep, how do I have the energy to do the things that I want to do? But more importantly, if I don't prioritise sleep over a 2 to 3 week period, which means that I'm working more than I should, I'm not saying no, I'm exercising less, I'm eating poorly, I'm drinking more, I start to get tired, agitated, I start to get frustrated. I'm a very patient, tolerant person, but I'll start to snap at the people that I care about, and I don't normally do that. I have no energy, I have a lack of energy, my mood will start to drop, and then what will happen is I'll start to want to, I'll feel that I'm withdrawing from things, right? And then invariably, these periods of overwhelming sadness come into my life. And what I mean by that is I want to cry. That's the gateway to anxiety and depression. So I know that if I'm not investing every day, I'm increasing the likelihood of these conditions coming back in. So that's why my journey continues, because I know I can do, I can make decisions every day, which is empowering, which keeps me healthy and prevents the likelihood of those things coming back.
Right. Is that, does that, is that tiring for you to do that?
No, because it's part of my everyday life.
Right.
These are just decisions that I, these are decisions that I make. It's almost, it's automatic in one sense, but I'm consciously thinking about things every day, especially, you know, we've all gone through an extraordinary couple of years. And like everybody, I've had great days and I've had shit days. I've had happy days and I've had days where I've bawled my eyes out like a little baby. But when I feel stressed and anxious or I'm feeling emotional, I now have an ability to sit back and go, okay, pause. What's actually happening right now? Do I have an understanding of what's contributing to the way I'm feeling? Do I have the tools that help me navigate through the challenging days? And if I don't, who do I need to go and talk to?
Right.
So it's not a chore. It's just an investment that I want to make because it keeps me healthier more often, but it also puts me in charge of what I choose to do. It's empowering. One of the things that I've learnt myself but also noticed with a lot of people, I don't use certain words. I'm going to use one now. I never say I suffer, because that keeps me anchored to the negativity of the experience. I manage my well-being.
Right.
That's empowering. So language, individually, but also to people that we're engaging with, is really important. Because if we don't change the language, this is my view, but if we don't change the language, we get stuck in the negative of the experience. Whereas I'm about, what language can I say to myself, which empowers me to take ownership of my mental health and emotional well-being.
Dr. Grant? What's your thought on it?
Yeah, look, a couple of just great things. And I mean, I think the listeners are lucky, Wayne, to hear from you. I always say, you know, one footy player, one famous musician, worth about 1,000 professors in getting the message out, you know. But you're pretty evolved with all this. You know, you've got a whole meta language of it, which, you know, young blokes or people who haven't thought about it can really learn a lot from. You know, in medical speak, we often call it relapse prevention. You know, so you know your warning signs. You know, if I'm not sleeping and you know, like night follows day, you're going to get into trouble again. So I think being able to head off trouble and knowing what your warning signs are. But the other thing that's really important, which I really like about the philosophy, is in the same way you look after your physical health, you prioritise your mental health. And a lot of your listeners will understand that. You know, if you treat your body terribly for 30 years, you know, by the time you get into my age, everything's falling apart. You know, you've got lung troubles or heart troubles, and, you know, if you're not looking after yourself. But it's the same with mental health. Like, if it takes a bit of time of your day, and you don't have to walk around like a guru all day, you know, but you just need to go, okay, I need to do these things. I need to get enough sleep. I need to eat well, I need to manage my stress, how many things I'm saying yes to. And you get a bit smarter at it as time goes on. With some of the patients, I say, look, you know, if you're someone with a bad back, right, you're not going to become a removalist, you know. So if you've had some mental health troubles, like, don't throw yourself into situations they're going to just exhaust you and stir everything up. So I think they're really wise and thoughtful ideas about being really proactive about it. Love it.
Christian, what, is there anything you do to take care of your mental health?
Oh, definitely. I mean, I am into the meditation. I know it's
yoga.
Yeah, I'm into the yoga and the meditation. I love that. And, you know, it's funny, I found the gym as well. And that was from just from reading and the sleep. I read a book about sleep. And I love that line that said, people used to think they used to get the swimmers up at 5 a.m. So, we've got to get up earlier, got to smash them out. And they've realised now that they were doing they were doing bad. In fact, a good workout comes from getting enough sleep. They've done the study. If you'll do a better workout if you've had the sleep rather than doing doing workout to get a better sleep. So the sleep things I try to manage, it's like having sleep availability.
Yeah.
Like if you can try to give yourself a sleep opportunity, I should say. If you don't go to sleep straight away, some people don't, some people are night owls, morning owls, you can't fight it. But if you can give yourself the opportunity of 7 to 9 hours in the sleep bed without the phone, you're going to have a good chance of getting a better sleep and a better day tomorrow. That's a real tangible thing. So I do think about sleep a lot. I do have to jump onto these kind of structures, regularly doing the yoga. Like I said, I found the gym. I get off on that because in the gym I've discovered can prevent, there's research into that about dementia and all this other crazy shit we don't know. You know, like the actual resistance training is actually good for you, you know. So that's the kind of stuff I do. It's to stay fit for the tour because I know when I'm on a festival and I'm there, say on the Blues Fest for 5 hours, you know, I'm going to have a real block. And so I put things into blocks as well. Yep. I'm very aware that, okay, I'm going on this tour, I'm going to have no sleep for a week, but that after that, I'm going to have a recovery period. I can sort of prepare myself emotionally is what I'm trying to say.
So there's a theme here. Just 1 second. There's a theme. All three of these men take responsibility for their mental health. They all have structure. And they all, there's a physical component to what they do, an exercise component. Schwatter is a big cyclist, massive cyclist. He's on the bike almost every day.
Slightly obsessed. I really like what Christian just shared then, and that is, again, not a criticism. This is an observation. What tends to happen is we wait until something happens.
Right. Yeah.
And then we're forced to act.
Yeah.
But Christian just shared a really important message there. And I would agree with this wholeheartedly. Christian knows that, okay, in 3 weeks' time, I've got a really important commitment. I'm going to be flat out for a week. So it's not just about waiting until he gets absolutely exhausted during that Blues Festival.
Yeah. Mm.
What can I do right now to mitigate the build-up of stress so I go into that festival with all of the energy that I need, I know I have to have to do that, but then coming off the back of it, I need to block out some time where I can recalibrate.
Yeah.
So as an observation, what a lot of people do is we get so busy that we're not aware of this thing is building up and stress is a cumulative process.
Right.
We've all got a stress threshold, which means that we can only tolerate so much stress and then we fall over and we are overwhelmed, stressed, unable to cope, might be feeling like we may have a mental health condition. So what I'd encourage listeners and viewers who watch this is take the advice of Christian. If you've got a busy event coming up, if you've got a busy period at work coming up, if you know that the stress is going to be through the roof, some point in the year, identify it and go, right, what can I do between here and there to manage it? What can I do to manage it through it? And what can I do post it? As opposed to, I've got this coming up, I'm not going to think about it. Yeah. By the time you get there, you're cooked. Mm. And it's like, well, now what am I doing?
It's funny you say that because I used to think about like a tennis player or a footy player. It's like, you can't be on all the time. Mm. You no one can. It's literally impossible. And that because that's the same for the punter on the street.
Yeah.
You can't have an unrealistic expectation about what you can put out. And that goes for your family as well. It's not that you don't love your family, but you've had a hard time. You can't always quite get there. And I say, oh, fucking dad, you're useless. Or, kids, these are real world problems that people are having.
Of course,
I mean?
But so, here's the thing. Sorry to interrupt.
Here's
the thing. I love Australia. I'm a Kiwi of it, but I've lived here most of my life. We have this attitude in Australia, she'll be right, suck it up, push through.
Yeah.
That is not sustainable.
Nah.
It's not sustainable. But we wear it as a badge of honour. It's never been more important, especially the last couple of years, whether you're male or female, is when we're not coping, it's like, I've got to stop. Work's going to have to wait. I need to take a moment here. I need to go for a swim. I need to go to the gym. I need to play the drums. I need to go for a bike ride. I need to do something for me right now. Because if we don't start doing more of that, we're so good at giving ourselves to everybody else because they're all important to us.
Yeah.
Also, like what you said about being vulnerable. So I think being stoic is good. You know, taking responsibility, that's a form of stoicism. In the past, we've said, toughen up. There's elements of toughen up that are important. Being stoic is okay. It's not a toxic thing. It's like, but it's not being blocked to your own feelings. Yeah, it's acknowledging, I feel bad, I feel shit, but it doesn't define me.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, actually, go. You got a question.
Question with a bit of notice. I'll come back to you on it.
Yeah.
Where's your happy place? I'll come back to you.
I love that.
Dr. Grant. Mine's easy. I like kayaking in the morning.
Yep.
And I just love it. And I'm out there. Although I went out, when was it? A few months ago, I was out in the Mornington Peninsula. And I was like, where is everyone? Where are all the swimmers? Where's Matt? And no one's there. And I got back to shore and there was, you know, a news program showing there were three sharks. And I'm sure people were on the beach going, oh, what do you reckon, 10 to 1? I reckon he's going down. But generally, when I'm not being murdered by a shark, kayaking, I love it. And again, you know, there's a lot of evidence around connection to nature as well. You know, without getting too hippie about it. But being out in nature, trees, fresh air, sky, Great for you.
You're speaking my wife's language. So is that how you take care of your mental health? Kayaking? How else?
I'm pretty proactive, as I guess you'd hope. I've been doing Tai Chi for about 10 years.
Yeah, okay.
And I absolutely love that. And again, to that, you know, what I talked about before, that sort of connecting in with our bodies. You know, we're so cognitive, and I reckon a lot of people's cognitive bandwidth is just exhausted, you know, from just so much news and social media. And I love just that slow pace of that. So I'm fairly proactive about it. Couldn't agree more about the sleep thing.
Yep.
And I actually sort of have a rule to unplug tech screens at 11 p.m. Otherwise, I'm up till all hours.
Yeah.
I'll be watching Triple M YouTube videos and all sorts of things.
Good tip. Good tip. Unplugging the tech. Maddie, your happy place.
I'd say it's swimming and being active, like you said. But you brought up a really good point. I feel like phones and laptops, I think it's really important to try and switch off and develop good habits. Like, I'll try not to be on my phone or laptop an hour before I go to bed, just to kind of block that out. Because like you said, it's so easy to be, you know, on your phone until quite late. But I just quickly wanted to touch on a point, what Christian said earlier about the pandemic. We were talking about it before. Like, it's such a small industry. We actually did our first tour in 2005. And while it sucked not being able to play shows, the thing about it is, a lot of musicians and people who are used to traveling around really kind of got used to finding that routine now. And now when they go to book a tour, the tours are different. They're not touring as much. They're balancing it out so that, you know, they're more checked in with their mental health. It's kind of changed the way that a lot of bands are touring and eating and going to the gym now. It's really kind of, in some way, financially, it was a huge strain and massive drag, but for mental health, it's done that little thing as well to plan. Is this is how good you can feel when you're at home and developing habits too.
Great tip. Christian, what do you have a place?
Glad you mentioned that was cooking. Something I got to do a lot more in the pandemic. Never get to do it when I'm on tour.
Yep.
My happy place is to be over the stove making food that I know my partner would never eat.
Signature dish?
Signature dish. Lentil spaghetti. I want to say plant production. I know this is hard, you know, being on the plant spectrum, being the plant guy, but that's why I say plant predominant. I'm not going to use the V word for vegan or anything like that, because I'm wearing animals, but do you know what I mean? I still think the plant thing, plant predominant.
So up until this moment, I didn't know you were the plant guy, but your shirt's giving it away.
I also don't want to put people off. I don't want to be like, oh, everyone should be vegetarian, but you know what I mean. Yeah. I know it's a little bit weird, but yeah.
Not at all.
I do love to cook when I'm at home.
Wonderful. Swatter, where's your happy place?
I've got two. If I'm really stressed, feeling quite emotional, go outside. If it's sunny, sit in the sun, close my eyes.
Great.
And I just allow the warmth of the sun to flood over my body. But my number one happy place is my bike. It's the one thing I do for myself. And as silly as this might sound, it allows me to... I don't have a phone. I don't on email. I'm not talking to anyone. And when I'm riding my bike, it gives me time to think, okay, how am I feeling? And the thing that I really enjoy is it allows me to recalibrate with my feelings and emotions. Mm-hmm. And I do it physically, but I do it predominantly because emotionally, it's my meditation. It's just the thing that I do for myself, and that allows me to be a better partner, better dad, better son, better employer, better person.
It's a great place to be, the bike. I think for me, it feels like it's the closest thing to flying.
You haven't said anything. I'm jumping in here because you've been great. I've really appreciated how you've led the conversation. But, you know, would you, this talk day, tell us about, like, you know, is this part of your journey as a broadcaster within the organisation? This is your day, which you've maintained over the last few years?
Yeah, the idea was a good mate of mine and a former Triple M colleague of mine. It was his idea. And as soon as the words came out of his mouth, it made sense to me straight away, particularly because of the premise of Triple M is a male-targeted brand. And I felt and we felt we had a responsibility to do more socially. Yeah. You know, we're not just a commercial radio station. We are a brand that people respect and look towards, and I think expect things from other than just rock, sport, and comedy. And so this was part of broadening that. So, you know, we can't just stand by and witness these social epidemics and not do anything about them. I think it's it's beholden on us to do something about them.
I think it's great, mate.
You know, Dr. Grant's been doing it for a while. Mm. SWAT has been doing it with his organisation for a really long time. So it's why we do it.
Right.
And, you know, I've had my own mental health experiences as well. I've been to the point where I can't get out of bed. I could not get out of bed. And so that's why I ask you the question. If we're talking, if someone today is watching who can't get out of bed, the one thing they do is just to get out and try and go for a walk around the block.
Mm. So I mean, I think it's really important. And we talked about at the start, you know, there's the front end, which is preventing problems. I know, Wayne, you're really big on this. And, you know, and that's really important, and to look after your mental health proactively. But I'm sure there'll be some of our listeners, we know the stats, will be right up the severe end.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a heavy conversation, but an important one. You know, 3,000 people take their lives in Australia, you know, every year. That's crazy. You know, 3/4 of those are men, you know. So if you're the sort of person who's having suicidal thoughts, which are actually not that uncommon in the community, get some help for them. Don't muck around with this. It's serious. It's a bit of an emergency. You speak to your GP or ring Lifeline or contact Beyond Blue. There's a lot of help out there. Mm. And as a GP, what I actually find is suicidal thinking, which is a horrible thought to have. You know, you feel like you're a burden. You feel like you don't want to be here. But it will come and go like a wave for most people.
Yep.
And so we need to make people safe during that time. Beyond Blue's got a free app called Beyond Now, which anyone can download on Apple or Google Play. And it gets you to actually make a suicide prevention plan. So you put what all your triggers are, what your danger signs are, all your phone numbers, you upload videos about your reasons to live, you know, you might have some nice photos of kids or nephews or whatever, you know. And if, God forbid, it's 2 a.m. and you're having a horrible time and thinking of doing something stupid, you've got your app there, and that's a really useful thing as well. But the big message is get help. I've got hundreds of patients who've really been through suicidality, got through to the other side, and had a wonderful life to live, and, you know, it's so important, and I think it's a great thing about Triple M really getting that message out there. These are common issues. Shouldn't feel like it's just you, you know, and there's great help out there, so you should avail yourself of that help.
And for somebody who's at that point where they're thinking, you know, they're thinking of suicide, it's to them, that's not stupid, is it? That's not it doesn't feel stupid to them.
Well, one of the things that happens with severe mental health is you sort of get tunnel vision on your thinking.
Yeah.
And that's part of the problem. You get this rigid, really tunnel thinking, and often very irrational thoughts.
Yep.
Like, I'm a burden on everyone, they'd be better off without me, you know. We've been doing a bit of research on this at Beyond Blue about this sense of feeling a burden. And it's wrong. Like, it's through this sort of very depressed, nihilistic lens. And when they come out the other side, oh my gosh, I can't believe I was in such a serious place before. So we've got to keep people safe.
Yeah, I think what Grant has shared is you know, incredibly important. As someone who has been in that position, though, where the thoughts were about harming myself, it's a very irrational headspace. You're not pragmatically looking at the world. And I was convinced that I was a burden to everyone that loved me.
Yep.
I was convinced that if I was no longer here, their lives would be better.
Yeah.
So as somebody who has been in that space before, what I would say to anyone who might be in that space today is that all hope might be lost. Life, as you know it, may never change. It does, and it can. Your family won't be better off.
No.
Your friends won't be better off. You'll be missed dearly. And the collateral damage from that will be felt for years.
Yeah.
Find one person you trust
and
talk to them. And hopefully you can find someone who's willing... I'm getting goosebumps talking about this right now. But find someone that you trust that won't judge you.
Yeah.
Because when you find someone that you can talk to openly, who will sit there and listen And if they're not a clinician, then they're not the fixer, like Christian said. That's the beginning of more conversations where somebody who you talk to can support you to find the appropriate help-seeking pathway.
And you don't need to know what to say. You don't have to articulate it, do you? You just need to... Sometimes it can just be... It can be two, three words just to let them know that you're not in a great space.
Sometimes... What I'd encourage people, if you're the person that somebody reaches out to, what I've found really helpful is asking the person, what do you need from me right now?
Yeah.
Help me understand what you need, and I'll do that to the best of my ability.
Yep.
And sometimes silence is okay. Don't go to problem solving. Don't try and solution fix it. Don't try to tell the person what to do. Listen to the person, no judgment, and just sit there.
Yeah.
Because you're holding space with that person.
Yeah.
Invariably, sometimes we don't want anyone to talk back to us. We just want to talk and have that person listen. And it's as simple as that.
Final thoughts? Christian?
Final thoughts. I think I just want to just back up what he said. Just agree that just like as someone, if you know someone that you think needs help, the most important thing is to be there for them, not to judge them, and to destigmatise that help is possible. Help's getting out there, and you know you've got options. That's what I want to say. Yeah.
Thanks, Christian. Awesome. Maddie?
I just want to thank everyone here. I feel like I've learned so much listening to the four of you talk that you know I'm going to take things from this that and implement too. So I just want to thank you guys for you know what you guys have spoken about, and it is an ongoing thing. And I just love what you said, Wayne, about finding that one person.
Yeah.
Because everyone does have that one person, and you're right, it can make such a difference even if you're in silence.
So. And that one person can be your GP. The single worst and best time of my life was at the exact same time, and I was in tears in a GP's office. And he's not actually my GP. I've gone to him once, and that was that day. Yeah. I never went to him before, and I never went to him again, but that was the turning point for me, the actual turning point where it, you know, similar to yours. Dr. Grant, a final thought?
Yeah, look, it's been a wonderful conversation, and I think the message is it takes a bit of courage.
Yeah.
It takes a bit of guts. Oh, yeah. You know, if you're going through it or you're worried about one of your friends, you're watching this video, do something about it. Get on the front foot about it, like right now. You know, this...
Yeah, it's okay to ask, isn't it? You can say to someone, aren't you thinking about this, you know?
Yeah, there's no evidence that you put the ideas in their mind. Actually, most people are quite relieved to talk about things. Yeah. And as we said, there's great services at Beyond Blue. GPs in Australia, we're very lucky. They can do a thing called the GP Mental Health Plan.
Yep.
And you get Medicare subsidised sessions with a psychologist, which is amazing. Sort of envy of a lot of countries around the world.
I've used them. It's excellent.
Yeah, amazing. You know, speak to a mental health professional, someone objective. But the first thing is get help. Don't just try and sort it out yourself. You can hear from us. This is common stuff, right? You're definitely not alone. So great work for Triple M on No Talk Day.
Well, the theme of Triple M's No Talk Day is it takes courage to talk about mental health. And that's from both perspectives, someone who is struggling with their mental health and somebody who's witnessing somebody, because it can be very confronting to try and open the conversation with someone that you care about.
Courage, yes. Confronting, yes. Overwhelming, yes. Scary, yes. But the more you do it, it's not courageous. It becomes normal.
Yeah.
So this is why the value of these conversations are so important. If we're willing to sit, connect and communicate, over time it becomes natural. And natural means we can talk about our mental health in a similar way we talk about our physical health. And that's why these conversations are fundamentally important.
Good point.
Absolutely. Gentlemen, I want to thank you for your time today. Wayne Schwoss, Matt O'Gorman, Christian McBride, Dr. Grant Blaschke from Beyond Blue. And if today's roundtable conversation has brought up any issues for you, you can reach out to Beyond Blue at any time at beyondblue.org.au.